Thanks for tuning in to BEATS Research Radio, a podcast stream from an active lab at the University of Ottawa Heart Institute. Our goal here at BEATS Research Radio is to communicate scientific research that's being conducted in the lab to the community. We hope that by doing this, we're able to engage people from all different backgrounds about how therapeutics and other technologies go from the lab to the clinic. Today, we have Dr. Nadia Khan with us, who is a clinician researcher and general internist at St. Paul's Hospital in Vancouver and scientific member of the Center for Health Evaluation and Outcome Sciences. While specializing in internal medicine, she focuses on hypertension and chronic disease management, specifically for vulnerable populations. Good morning and welcome back to BEATS Research Radio. Today I have Dr. Nadia Khan sitting in with me, who is a clinician researcher and general internist at St. Paul's Hospital in Vancouver and a professor in the Department of Medicine at the University of British Columbia. So to get back in with our conversation here, I'd just like to ask you a little bit about the healthcare differences for disease management and how different ethnic populations manage their disease and if there's a difference in how one would manage their disease versus another.
Yeah, so we know that there are differences in risk factors such as physical activity. So South Asian and Chinese populations living in Canada tend to exercise much less than the general population. And so also the other aspect is that when they do develop risk factors like high blood pressure and diabetes, they're much less likely to continue on with their medication. So we usually call that term medication adherence. Right. Their medication adherence is quite a bit lower than the general population. And it is bad even for the general population, but extremely poor in ethnic populations.
Okay.
And the thing is that we know that ethnic groups in Canada visit their physician just as often as the general population. So it's not because they're not seeking care and not having touch point interactions with healthcare professionals. They are having all of those, but they tend not to continue on with their medications.
Right. So the continuing on with their medications, would that be completely not stopping taking the medication, or would it be maybe forgetting or not being consistent with taking it?
Perfect. So what most definitions of not being adherent mean is that in order to get the full effect of a medication, you need to take it at least 80% of the time.
Okay.
So you're kind of given that up to 20% leeway for occasionally forgetting. But really, in order to reap the benefits of the medication, you need to be taking it at least 80% of the time. So non-adherence is less than that.
Okay. So do you think that because these people are seeking the medical advice and they are going to their doctors, is it something that is happening on the care side then, and we just have not figured out how to go about and how to help these patients manage their disease? Is that where it's coming from?
So I think that's a great question. And adherence is complicated, and it's usually also having to do with the healthcare provider, the patient factors, and also system factors. So for example, costs of medications. So if the costs of medications are high, it really reduces adherence in the Canadian population. That's why I think there's a strong push for a national pharmacare program of needed medications. And then the other is care provider. So even though we see care providers prescribing medications, but again, what we were talking about earlier in the segment is that patients don't necessarily have the understanding that we think they do about the benefits and the risks of the medications, and how to take them and all of these kinds
all the information,
critical information, exactly, that the patients and the public need to understand in order to really buy into the medication. So we know that communication between providers and patients makes a difference in whether or not anybody takes their medication. And then there are some factors from the patient's end. So if forgetting, for example, not having an established routine, general beliefs about medications. So a lot of the Canadian public actually do not believe in Western medications.
Okay.
They would much rather take a natural therapy, a supplement, than say a blood pressure pill or a diabetes medication or a cholesterol mm-hmm. pill. They have concerns about what are the effects of those medications. There's some degree of inherent mistrust. That's not everybody, but that's right. certainly an important proportion of the public. People. And this is even more emphasized mm-hmm. in the South Asian community.
Okay. So I guess we would need to be more transparent in terms of what's inside the medication. I guess in today's market, there's, a growing increase on what the consumer wants and what they want to see on the label and how a product will do in the market. So I can see how that would translate to medication as exactly. well. And you needing, you wanting to know what you're taking and what's in the supplement or what's in the medication would be an important yeah. for the consumer.
Yes, I think that's very true. Mm. I think that they want more information about the medication. And then in order to really buy into taking it.
Right.
And then also, I think you brought up a great point about transparency. And I think that it's important if patients aren't feeling well or they're having side effects with their medications, sometimes people just stop the medication. But I think it's also important to talk to your care provider mm-hmm. about issues you're having with the medications, be it cost, be it adverse effects, or concerns or questions about your medications. It's right. important to discuss it because right. I think the problem is a lot of healthcare providers do not know that people are non-adherent.
Right. Okay, yeah, it's a two-way street. It's what the care provider can really only help you as much as what the information you're able to give them. So
that's right.
It's definitely a both sides sort of scenario. Also, do you think you could tell now our listeners a little bit about how these systemic studies and how your research on hypertension can be extremely beneficial for the population on, a very large scale, and how gathering all of this data and analyzing it can provide these patients with better care at the end of the day?
So understanding the surveillance aspect right. of high blood pressure, diabetes, stroke, heart disease, and drilling down at some of these causes, like why are we seeing these? We were interested in these questions about how do mm-hmm. different ethnic groups manage their disease, for example. And so monitoring afterwards, we were able to identify things like the South Asians, for example, were being referred less for cardiac rehabilitation.
Okay.
Then this issue of medication non-adherence and beliefs. And all of those things help you target interventions or ways of trying to solve that problem. Mm-hmm. So this all gives greater understanding for scientists. And for example, we created an intervention trial called the Namaste trial for patients with type 2 diabetes who are South Asian, trying to really, all of these factors that we had understood from all of the other data that we had collected on high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, and how they were having struggles with managing, struggles, as I mentioned, with engaging in physical activity, struggles with identifying what's the right diet, their mm-hmm. knowledge base, all of those things, and struggling with adhering to medications. So we really worked on those in this, in a very culturally tailored way, right. Addressing some of the belief systems that these groups had. And then we're almost done recruiting for that study. It's 600 patients, and I think we're at 525 okay. now. So we're getting close to the end of that study. So we'll really be able to see whether or not interventions directed at these ethnic groups, trying to get at some of the deeper cultural factors mm-hmm. actually can make a difference right. in their care.
Right. And I guess the answers that you get from one ethnic group can lead to answers for another
Absolutely.
Because of the different links that one
Absolutely.
Might have with another.
Absolutely. So one hypothesis is that families can play a larger role in mm-hmm. in helping with disease management. So right now we know from surveys that family members often are informal caregivers of patients, mm-hmm. but they themselves don't know exactly what to do for their family mm-hmm. member to help them manage their disease. And I think a lot of people can relate to having either a family member mm-hmm. telling them to do
Definitely.
Things that may or may not be helpful, right. but telling them to do things, and also as a family member struggling with what can mm-hmm. you do to help people.
Right.
So this is something we found in the South Asian population. So a part of our trial was to actually to identify, can you have family members working very specifically and in a targeted fashion,
right,
to try to help their family member. And I think if we find that those differences are beneficial, that would be something that we could bring to other groups, the general population. Those kinds of
right.
interventions might be helpful for a broader range of people.
Right. And for elderly patients too, having a family member who can be an advocate for you.
Absolutely.
And also a family member who is able to possibly translate in certain scenarios, because there are language barriers in some sense, as well as for the aging population too, having an advocate who can be there is also great. So a family member is helpful, I guess.
Yes. So there's sort of your in-home or in-neighborhood support system,
right,
that we could be leveraging more. But that's an example of how research from ethnic groups can help translate to a broader population and maybe a benefit to a broader population.
Right.
And different things like different elements of diet or physical activity that were found useful in one population may also be very useful in other populations.
Another.
So, for example, the Mediterranean diet,
right,
that has been adopted in many different groups, that was predominantly more seen in the Mediterranean area.
Right.
So that's another example about how looking at different, what different groups have to offer, and again, helping the broader population.
Okay. So do you think in Canada, is there a main challenge when it comes to hypertension management and prevention for those, or prevention of hypertension for those vulnerable populations? Is there one? I guess it's a very difficult question to answer because it could be a number of things, but is there one thing that sticks out more than others?
I think there's a few, and I think it's also impacts the entire population, but there is a significant issue with unawareness of high blood pressure.
Okay.
And this is mostly occurring in younger men, working age men.
Okay.
And so there is a significant population that has high blood pressure, requires medication treatment to prevent heart disease and the development of kidney disease and all those complications we talked about at the start of the hour, and they actually don't know they're hypertensive. And that's probably because they're not seeking medical care.
Okay.
These are the people that are working, and they tend not to see physicians. So that is one key issue, is trying to improve unawareness in that patient, in that subgroup. They are, in a way, a vulnerable population because they don't seek medical care.
Right. And is there maybe a telltale sign or something to look for for that population, if we were to give some advice maybe?
So the challenge with hypertension is often called the silent killer.
Right.
So it is actually asymptomatic, but there are ways of screening at your pharmacists, at your pharmacies.
Right.
At some fire halls have blood pressure screening kiosks.
Okay.
And also different clinics, you know, will screen people's blood pressures, or even purchasing a home blood pressure cuff for screening and really looking for those elevated
signs.
Numbers greater than 140 over 90 in most people, or 135 over 85 using your home monitors. So those kinds of numbers should trigger someone to see their doctor or their nurse practitioner or their care provider. The other is that getting blood pressure under control in everyone. And so we find that actually elderly women are more likely to not have their blood pressure controlled.
Right.
And we know that elderly women tend to have higher rates of stroke.
Mm-hmm.
So given that high blood pressure is the most important driver of stroke, it's really critical that we get, that's another subpopulation of people, a vulnerable population that we need to work on.
And yeah, staying on top of your own health and being proactive and
absolutely
finding solutions is great. And also just having an advocate in the family, someone who, because in my family, my sister is a nurse and she likes to put the blood pressure cuff on everybody and go around
perfect.
And check and make sure everyone's okay.
That's
so
perfect.
It's definitely something, even though you might not, you know, be in the age group that would be hypertensive, or, you know, it's good to just be, to know what your health is.
And the Hypertension Canada guidelines recommend that all adults So all adults, and even they have guidelines for children, but all adults should mm-hmm. have their blood pressures measured at every appropriate physician visit.
Right.
So it's really important that we do more surveillance, because I think we now need to look at how can we prevent hypertension from happening. Mm-hmm.
So the tools that would be helpful for that, the tools that would be helpful to mitigate this challenge possibly would be going to the pharmacy, going to those fire halls maybe. Would there be other possible tools that we would, you know, that we can take to possibly, you know, help this scenario?
Well, I think that's the best, those are the best ways of mm-hmm. trying to identify whether or not you, you know, screening for high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. And then the other important part is if you or your healthcare provider thinks that you have high blood pressure, is to make sure you have some sort of out-of-office mm-hmm. measurement, because those are much more accurate than office right. measurements, to try to determine whether or not you have high blood pressure right. or not.
And taking the measurements consistently too, because yeah. I guess it would change depending on the time of day, depending Absolutely. On what you ate, or lots of different factors.
That's so right, that's right.
The blood surveillance pressure. Even just on your own surveillance is extremely important.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay. So what is... would you say the long-term goal of your research, what you're looking for on the broader scale, what you're looking for on the horizon, something, you know, that you're working towards?
So as I was telling you about that Namaste trial, so we're going to be concluding that trial, and that mm-hmm. was really to answer the big question about whether or not addressing culture in a very deep and meaningful way, leveraging some of those factors I was mentioning, mm-hmm. families, peer support, improved education makes a difference. So is that, you know, how we should be managing high blood pressure and diabetes, for example. Right. And a lot of organizations, including the WHO, Diabetes Canada, Hypertension Canada, they've all asked that we need to have culturally tailored programs mm-hmm. to try to help some of these vulnerable populations. But we really don't know how to do that. Right. So I'm hoping that this research may help shed some light on exactly how can we deliver that culturally tailored care that right. would be effective, cost effective as well. Mm-hmm. And then the other aspect of research that I'm hoping to do, sort of at the conclusion, is more of these patient-centered research projects trying to help with healthcare delivery, so it is delivering the care that the public wants and that right. the public needs, and how we as healthcare providers can be more responsive to what the public is looking for and how right. that might help with healthcare delivery. Because mm-hmm. we have a lot of research on what is effective.
Right.
And then the challenge is implementing it. We could have all of this investment in research, but when it actually mm-hmm. comes to the patient, how do we get the next hurdle, having the patient reap the benefits of all of this everything. Research. So
right.
so that's sort of my area, is trying mm-hmm. to make sure that all these interventions that we know about, the blood pressure medications, mm-hmm. the monitoring, all the devices, that they can be really optimally implemented in the public, so that right. they reap all the rewards.
Right. So it's providing those tools to the patient and
That's
making
right.
sure, and also for the healthcare provider, so that there's a, you know, making that two-way street a little bit easier
exactly.
to get across.
Exactly.
There. Right.
Exactly.
So do you think you could tell us a little bit about maybe a finding that you recently, or a systemic review that you've done, or something recent that, you know, kind of popped out and you said, oh, that is different than what I thought, or, you know, something that was interesting.
So we had just finished a study that was published in Hypertension mm-hmm. and it was looking at using the SPRINT data. So it was a large hypertension trial in the U.S. and we were actually asking a question that the public asks me all the time as a hypertension specialist, which is, well, do you think my blood pressure could be too low now?
Mm.
Now you've treated it. Is there a bottom number where it's now too low and it's harmful for me?
Right.
So we actually want to evaluate this, and we actually did study that and found that blood pressures below 60 millimeters of mercury for the diastolic mm-hmm. actually were too low and started to cause increased cardiovascular event rates. So we weren't really able to tell that before because studies typically didn't bring people's blood pressures down
right,
that low.
That wasn't
so this sprint trial gave us a great opportunity to find that. So that was really an interesting finding that we hope is helpful for care providers.
Okay, very cool. Well, thank you very much for coming in to our radio show today and giving our listeners a little insight on your research and hypertension and everything that you're doing for the scientific and medical community. So thank you to all of our listeners as well. Also to the University of Ottawa Heart Institute, eLife, the Canadian Biomaterial Society, Ottawa Student Chapter, and Beats Research Lab, who are supporting us here. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, and we will see you next week.